First of all, I will just say that my name is Donna Gonzalez and I am from Chamizal. I actually come from a very deep line of farmers. I would say I am 11 generations here, and all of my ancestors were land caretakers and lovers. It was a survival.
This is Donay Gonzalez. Welcome to TCA Radio Hour. Today, we're talking about gardens, which is to say, we're talking about water, community, food, beauty, family, heritage, droughts, and our planet. We're thinking about bugs, growth, teaching, fun, and observation. I'm Alice Morillon. Let's hear more from Donay.
I had always known that we keep like a summer garden, but it wasn't cool until like high school. And then I was like, all right, like I see that all these other kids like have land, but they're not planting, and I am. So that was cool. But then I started going to, like big organizational events with youth. From around the state, from around the country. And a lot of these people were only farming on rooftops or in like or in just con like in concrete, on concrete and raised beds. And I was just like, what? Like I feel like listening to stories about people just trying to figure it out, like where they had the tiniest amount of space. I was like, dude, like I have, like I'm lucky because I have like so much already. And I didn't realize, like, it took me a long time to realize, 18. I was like, word, like I'm lucky.
I talked with Donay over Zoom last week. I first met her about 6 months ago as I learned about the Sembradores program that she teaches. I was really interested and wanted to learn more. As soon as we started talking on the phone back then, I realized how passionate and dedicated Donay was. Talking with her last week only reinforced this impression.
I went to college. I tried to be a beautician. I went to cosmetology school, and I loved it, but I fell in love with farming. I remember I had like some type of arm, I had an arm injury, and so I wasn't able to be in beauty school at the moment, but I came home, and I was like, pulling weeds, and it was like gentle enough I could do it. And I remember just feeling like this. Yeah, I can't even explain it. It was just like an epiphany, like a life epiphany of like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And so from like that day on, I just knew, like my heart knew, my soul knew, like Mother Earth told me, like, bro, be in the garden. And so it is where I have been. Off of that, I have been teaching, I would say, for around six to 8 years now. And that's like a blessing all on its own. I feel like, I'm still learning every day, but it was a very fun journey to like decide that I want to be a farmer and then to realize like that everybody needs to eat, because people, like a lot of people were like, bro, like farming, that's not, you're not gonna make money. And my argument was always like, you're eating, right? Like everybody's eating. What do you mean? You have to buy food. So that's where I'm at. I'm like, everybody eats, so everybody buys. And if you can buy it from your homie or the neighbor or the chick down the street, then at the end of the day, like you're winning because you got it local, you got it with love, like you got it from your neighbor. And so that's where, yeah, I feel like that's just where community comes in.
Over the past few weeks, I talked with Patrick O'Connell, Anastasia Garcia Santesteban, Gwendolyn Pieper, and Donay Gonzalez. All four of them are gardeners, and they were kind enough to share some of their stories with me. Here's Anastasia Santesteban. A Friday morning, early June, we were talking outside of her house. She was sitting on a swing, I was on the grass, and so I was trying to catch her voice as she swung back and forth. Movement, as kids know, sometimes tells just as much of the stories.
When I was younger, even now. My most top priority was catching bugs and eating food and running in the mud in the Alsekia. That was my top priority when it came to farming, not really the planting part. I was like, whatever. The Alsekia is so much fun. I don't like the bugs very much anymore. I don't like creepy crawlies. But my sister does. I mean, she'll come in with a drawer with like 10 ladybugs, 5 caterpillars, and 1,000 roly-polies. And she'll be like, my new pets! I really like the Alsekia, but it's just sometimes sad because one year we were in the middle of irrigation. It was a horrible drought. We were in the middle of irrigation, and then all the water was gone like that. And my dad's like, where's all the water? And we ran out because of the drought. And that was really sad. To have water and then it just goes away is like really, really sad.
This year again, we're in a drought. This isn't new, and this isn't likely to change. Over the past 100 years, droughts have become more and more frequent in the Southwest. The current drought period that started in the 2000s is likely to last longer than the precedent ones. Scientists worry we entered a period of decades-long scarcity. Growing up in France, I used to say that I would be lucky if I managed to keep a cactus alive. Looking back on it, I think I overwatered.
Everything out here is really water low maintenance. These aren't even doing very well, even though I've been watering these little pine trees.
Oh, yeah.
So out here is more like a real desert garden. Yucca and steaming. Blue fescue grass, and this is one of my favorite plants. This is feather reed grass. This is going to turn golden tan yellow. It's beautiful.
Patrick O'Connell is a lifelong gardener. Over the past 60 years, he's grown plants in different climates, from California to Maryland, before eventually landing in Taos. Taos is unlike the other places he's been. The heat, the dryness, the wind. Elements add up to create a challenging ecosystem. Since he moved here 2 years ago, he's been caring for his new garden. If you go to his house, the care that he puts into his plants is obvious. They are well arranged, trimmed, and, well, they are beautiful. In the front, flowers bloom against the stuccoed wall. To the side, pines bring some shade to the soil underneath. In the back, more flowers, a huge apricot tree that abounds with shade, and vegetable plants. Pat has planted tomato plants in different spots to get a sense of what works best here. More shade, the morning light, behind a windbreaker. He's observing the plants around him to understand how to best grow them.
Here, I think you have to use mulch and stone as spaces between plants, whereas in greener places in the United States, you can let plants grow up right up to other plants. You just have to thin them. But here, things don't spread so quickly, and if you plant a big area of one plant, it's going to take a lot of water to keep it going. So I think smaller plants that don't suffer so much from the wind, that are still drought tolerant, with stone, decorative stones, you can gather all kinds of colored stone around here.
Yeah. Do. Yeah.
And you have to think more of it mixing in with the landscape. I keep these trees alive by watering them. These mature trees, they need water.
They do?
They can't survive on their own this year.
Really?
Yeah, this one is struggling.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes when a tree's in trouble, it'll put out a lot of extra pollen and extra cones to try to reproduce itself.
That makes sense.
Make seeds. So this tree is really struggling. It's crispy. I watered it twice. It's very dry. So I'm afraid to lose these. These are native pinyons.
And trees survived. Or at least they have survived. Trees and plants have adapted. They're still changing today. Every year, when seeds germinate, grow into a plant, and produce their fruit, they are responding to a changing environment. Each year, seeds have adapted and are saved for the year after, and the one after. So, evolution can happen, and food can keep on growing. Here's Donnie again.
I always just have this thing of how everything belongs, but we, like, none of it belongs to us. You know what I mean? Like, it's here. It's here for us, but we don't own it. And so all the time I have to tell myself, I'm like, oh man, like these aren't my seeds. Like I took care of them, but I have to share them. And so sharing that with people, like You know, like we can't buy the rain, we can't buy the sunlight, like we can't buy the things that we need, that living things need. We can't buy them. They are here because they are, because we need. And so I feel like just teaching that, even if people like push back, because I totally get pushed back about it. They're like, yo, but like corporations do buy water. And I'm like, yeah, but at the end of the day, it's not good. Like that's commodity. And we don't want to live like a commodity life. We want to live community. We want to live resourceful. We want to live like being in mind that we can, like, you know, have healthy babies and healthy grandkids and have a healthy world that far along.
Sunlight and water. No, we can't buy them. Or at least, we probably shouldn't. I like how Donne puts it. We take care of them. And really, they take care of us. This year, I've become an acequia paciente up in San Cristobal. Every week, I've been lucky to open the head gate, the compuerta, and let the mountain water come down to the thirsty young plants. Surface water, water that irrigates fields through acequias, that water plays a key role in maintaining healthy ecosystem in northern New Mexico. Not only does this communal system imply neighborly collaboration, it keeps the water in our soil instead of sending it down to the Rio Grande. When irrigating with acequias, the water seeps into the ground and renews our underground aquifers. Pat is observing our ecosystem and he shares his fears.
And it's changing.
Yeah.
Quickly. We're in a 20-year drought, which is a fairly short period of time, really, 20 years. And no forecast is going to get any better. It's just the way it is.
It's a little scary. It's very scary.
Thank you. It's very scary. And I can't say it's worse for young people because I feel terrible about it, but I have grandchildren. And I think what they're going to face. How do you tell them? You can't say it might get better. It's probably not going to get better.
Mm-mm.
So it's just, I don't know how to even prepare them to think about it. It's hard to fathom how stupid people can be and how short-sighted. When I was in college and I graduated in 1976, global warming was a topic. It was a fact. This is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do something about it. I had that when I was 21 years old. Human beings are short-sighted and selfish and hope la-di-da, somebody will fix it. And
yeah.
That may be the answer. The answer may be that technology will save it. We're not really pushing that either. We need to figure out some system that draws carbon out of the atmosphere, some technology, because people are not going to conserve. They're not going to build smaller houses.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to live close to their job to walk to work.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I drive about half an hour to go to work. Every day. I'm growing some plants and animals, too. But if I'm honest, it doesn't matter. Or rather, it doesn't do enough. Sometimes it's overwhelming to look at our situation and to know, well, things are going to change. It's scary. When Pat and I talked about this, I didn't know what to reply. I still don't really know. Like many of us, I do like the ostrich. I put my head in the sand. You're listening to TCA Radio Hour. After the break, Anastasia, Donne, and Pat share more reflections about the land, the water, and our relationship to it.
Trees. I love to climb our apricot tree. She's been around since my dad was a little boy. Like, literally, she was, like, already a big grown-up tree when my dad was little. So she's been around for a long time. And I really like climbing her. She's got some great climbing stuff, but she's dying. And oh. It's kind of sad because she's, like, super old.
Like, why is she dying?
She's just getting old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 1 year during the winter, we heard a crack, and an entire branch fell off the tree, and it was dead.
I know.
She's still very much alive. She's just old.
Mm-hmm.
This is Anastasia Garcia Santesteban. You're listening to TCA Radio Hour. I'm Alice Moyon. Today, we talk garden.
This is our greenhouse. Welcome. It is too hot. It's very hot, you can see.
Mm-hmm.
All the steam. My mom likes to hang out in the greenhouse a lot. And I don't hang out in it too much. It's really hot. It's over. Come with me. Here's something me and my sister like to do. In the winter, especially this winter when COVID hit, we usually would have playdates and we'd go all around town, like, hanging out at other people's houses in the snow. But this year, it was, like, not like that at all. And, like, the snow was so crazy. So hot. And we wanted to break from that. So when we built the greenhouse, what we did is we would come in here and it was still super hot because of the sun. So we... And it was freezing outside, so we were just playing in the greenhouse for hours.
That's awesome.
In summer clothes.
Anastasia is passionate about many things, including making stop-motion videos. She has a few dolls that she works with, creating scenarios, dialogues, and producing the videos. But really, she doesn't need many artifacts to invite people into her world. I think she's a natural storyteller.
We got chickens. We have a lot of chickens, but a lot of our chickens are getting old. And so last spring, we got some new ones. We got, like, I don't know, like a dozen or something. Mm-hmm. I think 20. Yeah, 20. I think we got, like, 20. I'll have to ask my father, my dad.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of our chickens were dying. And so we're like, we better get some new ones. Besides, a lot of our older chickens, their eggs were starting to get deformed.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were getting really, really old.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were dying, so we decided to get some new ones. And we got a lot of them. They're really nice. Now they're grown-ups. Now, this is a hilarious story. On winter solstice, we thought that we just got chickens without any rooster because a year before, we got these little chicks. They're not chicks anymore, of course. Our rooster died. My dad was very sad. He loved our rooster. So we had no clue we got a rooster. We tried to get a rooster, but they're like, I don't think we've got a rooster. And so we were like, oh, well, I guess we'll look next year. Well, on winter solstice, we're like, let's make a fire outside and enjoy the winter solstice. And so we're making a fire. And then out in the blue, we heard. And my dad's like, what is that sound? And he's like, our chickens are in danger. And he's like, Anastasia, Simona, go see if they're okay. And then we were running and we were like, oh my God, are they okay? Okay, we have to, what are we going to do? Oh my goodness. And we thought it was a chicken. And there it was, making, and we're like, what? And then we figured out it was a rooster, and now we have a rooster.
To some of us, farming is a decision, a choice that we had to make. I fall into this camp. I was curious about the early mornings and the fresh produce. I've been learning how much more there is to it, and the beauty of the work is surprising me. For others, farming was always part of their lives. It was obvious. Donna is one of them. She has been gardening for as long as she can remember.
One of my, like, fondest memories is probably being in the garden as, I would say, like, 3 or 4, and just chilling and watching, like, my grandpa and my mom work, and I don't know if they were, like, harvesting corn or weeding, but I remember just, like, sitting there and just, like, eating peas, and they would, like, pop over and be like, yo, you're cool, and I'm like, yup, like, I'm fine. Yeah, and I remember like me and my cousin like running through and harvesting peas, you know, like peas were always just like the bomb. So harvesting, getting a bag full and just like sitting by the acequia, just like eating up. But very sweet memories of just like the garden and what it was to me growing up. Loved it, totally loved it, in love with it.
When Donna and I talked last week, it became obvious to me. Growing food is not only about the land, it's about people. It's about being a community that is connected and can help one another.
I feel like I love like almost everything that I grow, but I'm big on root crops because they do so good here. I feel like here in the valley, we get like super cold nights. Even like today, I was cold. I was like, bro, we should make a fire. Yeah. Like, I'm not cozy in my house. And so I know root crops are like tough. They're hardy. You know, my carrots are always just amazing and they do great. And I love to, I'm big on selling produce to kids who aren't getting it. So school districts per se, you know, low income school districts. Mm-hmm. I'm like big on making sure that children are getting the nutrition that they need. Mm-hmm. In the state of New Mexico, you know, 2 out of 4 kids are hungry. 3 out of 4 kids do not have the nutritional value that they need. And once all that comes into play, like they, you know, they're not getting the education they need because they have a health factor. And once the health factor's in, then it's just like this stupid game of like cat and mouse. But if I can help, or at the end of the day, I feel better in knowing that I help by providing even the smallest amount of vegetables, but I know that like I grew my carrots with love and they're organic and they're traditional, and I know these homies can like eat them raw and enjoy them, and I feel like that is a big deal for me. Yeah, I feel like that's the biggest deal for me. But so having something for kids, or planting things that kids like, you know, like carrots, Hokkaido turnips, peas, things that are just easy for them. I'm big on just like native plants and just things that are wild. So like quelites, like our wild spinach, our purslane and verdolagas, and you know, wood sorrel or chicoyole. Everything is just very tasty, and a lot of people don't know that they can eat them, but I'm always like, try it.
Not only does Doné grow food that she shares with her community, she also teaches how to do it. For over 7 years, Doné has been teaching fellow New Mexican how to farm.
The program, I work for the New Mexico Waseca Association, and we have a program called the Sembradores, and it is a farmer training experience or program. This would be cohort 7, I believe. So we've been doing it for 7 years now. Each cohort is around 3 to 4 people. And we study around a 15-point curriculum. And it's from, you know, planting a seed to caring for a seed, how to harvest, how to market, how to wash, all that good stuff. I do like to add fun stuff like, you know, medicine making, animal, you know, animals, chickens, just like bugs and plants and all the good stuff that the regular agriculture world doesn't talk about. You know, food preservation, winemaking, just lots of fun stuff. But we hang out for majority of the year. And after the year, we hope that you have enough commitment or enough like empowerment in yourself to continue in the garden world. And that can be, you know, as long as you're gardening something small for yourself. It could be flowers, it could be perennials, it could be a pea patch. As long as you're doing something that makes your heart happy, we are happy, you know, using water rights and keeping your land watered and happy and healthy. Like soil restoration is big, water health and community health. And that is what the Sembradores program is about.
I think making one's heart happy is key to gardening. Being outside, being part of life, and being able to share the fruit of your labor is really quite unique. The soil smells so good after it rains. The youngest leaves are so green when they first come out. It's not so often that one gets to participate in such a big scale project. I mean, this one takes months. It takes patience and observation, and it creates a life beauty. Food and beauty. What more can we ask for?
Well, there was this one time when it was raining, and the rain was super cold, but it was a really bad drought year, and it was super bad, and so it was raining. It was pouring, and we just planted, and it was raining, and we were really happy because it was pretty, there was a lot of drought. And so me and my sister went running out to dance in the rain, and that was really fun, but we didn't wear clothes, so it was super cold. And so then we went into our garden, and we would just lay down on the earth, and it was super, it was warm. It was like hot with the cold rain, and it was so calming.
Anastasia and Simona know about joy and celebration. They're 11 and 7, and they know so much. They know how to pick peas and how to climb trees. They know different bugs and appreciate their colors. They know about the fairies and the best garden snacks.
This other one I have is when me and my sister, my mom hadn't gone to the store in a while, and me and my sister did not want to go inside. And we just planted, and all our stuff had come out. So we had arvejón and favas, ava beans, and it was, we had like corn, and some, we had some strawberries, we had quelites, and we didn't want to go inside, so we just ate everything, literally. And then we came in for dinner, and my mom was like, oh, I made you dinner. And we're like, oh, yeah, we don't need nothing. We were so stuffed. We ate so much outside. It was so delicious.
Anastasia's parents grew up here in northern New Mexico. As kids, they spent time playing in their acequias, climbing trees, and today their own children get to play in their steps. A few weeks ago, Anastasia shared with me a tip about acequias. They are a great place to play with marbles.
Well, when the acequia is running, but it's not like crazy, like it just is right now, like when it's pretty low and shallow, and you can barely hear it, is probably the best time to go look for like pretty glass or like marbles. Like me and my sister, we always find marbles, and they're like really old and stuff, and we show them to our dad, and he always has a story to tell us, because he said that when he was a kid, he would lose so many marbles in that acequia. And so we basically find all of his marbles, and we really like doing that. And me and my sister, we get a big organizing bin, and when the water is crazy, we like to get in the organization bin and put it in the acequia, and it's like a boat that lasts 5 seconds. It's super fun. We do it all day.
Children know. Sometimes I think adults forget. I certainly forget and need to be reminded of the simple beauty of things. Donée has a little companion, her daughter, that observes the world with her, and I think that this companionship is another way to be reminded of this simple beauty. But to be true, I don't think Donée was ever likely to forget about it.
I had my daughter in 2017, so she has been gardening for a couple years herself. I had her, I gardened the entire pregnancy with her. I was in the garden the day before she decided to come. And so I was very blessed just to like be able to farm the entire opportunity to be that healthy. The gentleman I was the sembradores I was working with, it was 3 boys. It was my first year with the New Mexico Acequia Association, so it was like a big deal. Mm-hmm. But the boys were so supportive. They were just always like, don't lift that, like don't touch that. And at the end they were like, call me Uncle Nick and call me Uncle Shane and Uncle Matt. And so it was just like very genuine and very sincere to be with them, and like to, yeah, very sweet. But she's learned so much. I feel like she's lucky, like her first food was fresh pumpkin soup, and so she's always just had so many fresh vegetables herself. This week I was just like laughing because she went to harvest. She always goes with me to the garden to open, to close, to weed, but this week I was like hanging out in the hoop house and she harvested herself some turnips and peas and she was sitting on the tractor and she was just munching and I was like, where are you? And sure enough, she was like, I'm over here, I'm snacking. And I was like, okay, like who can even argue? Like it took the cutest picture. I'm always just like, I'm so in love with all of it. Couldn't get any more perfect.
Earlier in the show, Donné was mentioning how some things belong here. They do not belong to anybody. They just are. And we are their caretakers. I believe that Anastasia, Donné, and Pat, in their own singular ways, are caretakers of such an element. An element of appreciation for the surrounding world, of respect for the life around us, of love for beauty. I want to thank them for their care, because we all need it, and it makes this world a better place. This was Donné González, Anastasia García Santesteban, and Patrick O'Connell sharing with us their love for gardening and the natural world. I'd like to thank the three of them for inviting me into their world. You're listening to TCA Radio Hour. Playing now is a song of Lon Pignon. Coming up after the break, a discussion with Gwendoline Pieper. Gwendoline is a botanical artist here in Taos, and she shares with us her work to promote soul health through her art. Stay tuned. Welcome back to TCA Radio Hour. I'm Alice Morillon. A few months ago, I saw an article in the newspaper. It caught my attention as I recognized the name, Gwendoline Pieper. Gwendoline and I had met a while ago in France. She came to Paris to visit Eli, another Taosinho that I was living with. That was back when traveling was as easy as getting on a plane, and she came to study winemaking somewhere next to Bordeaux. So I read on. Gwendoline was back in Taos, working as an artist and activist. She came back a few months ago, amidst COVID and the changes it imposed on all of us. It sounded like she was making the most of it. Earlier this year, Gwendoline was a resident at Casa Minca, a new art residency in Taos. She is a lifelong artist, but learning about botanical art and graduating from college in 2020 gave her a new perspective to her work. In April, she sat down with me to talk about her projects. You'll notice that we talk about bags. These are tote bags that she created. On them, you can see one of her paintings. Flowers and plants that together create great cover crops for our land. Listen on to learn how and why these cover crops matter. So I read the article in the newspaper about the work you're doing and the residency you're also doing, and I'm curious about that. I think the name is Casablanca. Can you tell us about it?
The name was actually misprinted. It's Casa Minca.
Casa Minca. Okay.
Yes, yes. It's a house that was built by Malcolm Brown, who is a interesting architect who was building in Taos in the 60s. And he built, a minca is a Japanese farmhouse, and it means house of the people. And he built it to kind of be like a gathering space for people. And so the people who have just bought it have tried to honor that vision and create like a space for artists and activists to do residencies and do work in the community. So it's a cool thing. People should check it out. Casa Minca, not Casablanca.
Got it. That's cool. So are you the only resident right now or are there other people?
So my residency has ended. I was just doing a month-long residency. which was great. I was able to do a lot of art, and I'm continuing projects on their land, so I'm going to be implementing the cover crops that I depicted in my bags, and hopefully doing some kind of a cool experiment where I'm going to plant all of these species and monitor the soil and how it changes, do some tests. Hopefully we'll see results. We will see.
That's awesome. So you mentioned your bag right then. Can you tell us about what these are and what they look like and why they were created?
Yeah, so I got back to Taos and wanted to do something with my time. And my kind of main interests are art and then soil science. And I was trying to figure out a project that kind of married those two things. And I've recently become very interested in cover crops because of their role in creating healthy soils. And so I wanted to show how cover crops can be beautiful and, when planted in a diverse mix, also extremely important to the health of the soil, the health of the whole ecosystem, and ultimately our own health. And so I painted this painting of a diversity of cover crops and had it printed onto tote bags. And I'm using 20% of the profit to buy and donate cover crop seeds. And people can just use them if they want to try cover crops.
That sounds great. And where can they buy these seeds or get them?
Get them. Yeah. So I'm donating them through the Taos Land Trust. And it makes sense because they have a no-till seed drill. So you can rent the seed drill and use the cover crop seeds.
Yeah. That's awesome. Can you... for those of us who don't know so much about soil health and the role of cover crops, can you explain a little bit what they do and why it's important?
Yeah, so kind of long story, although it doesn't really have to be, but conventional agriculture has been kind of operating under this understanding of crop systems from the totally wrong point of view. Like monocultures will just grow one crop and the soil will be bare for half the year, and we use pesticides and fungicides and all these things to kill everything else. We just want the crop, and we just want the profit, and we're going to mine the soil and take everything from it and only replace the nutrients through synthetic fertilizers. And we've realized that doesn't really work long term, and it kills all of the beneficial microbes, all of the beneficial insects, and it creates this just dead ecosystem. And so cover crops are about putting those nutrients and that life back into the ecosystem and covering the soil, which is, of course, extremely important because we're losing so much topsoil due to erosion. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these benefits, creating habitat for microbes, sequestering carbon, keeping the soil covered, keeping moisture in the system, and reducing reliance on pesticides and fertilizers and... Sorry, this is a very long list.
No,
I could go on.
It's important. It's good. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. And so is that what you're going to implement at Casa Minca? How are you going to do that? Are you just going to plant the seeds that you have and see what happens? Or is there like, do you have steps to make it work?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm very new to all this. I've done a lot of reading about it, but I haven't implemented any of it. And of course, theory is very different from practice. So I have an idea about how I'm going to do it. And so they have this field that has been, in my opinion, degraded. There's just a bit of grass, a lot of bare soil. It hasn't really been properly managed in a long time. So they're just going to let me seed all the land with this cover crop mix.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the species are on the bags.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do it with the no-till seed drill.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do it this spring. Hopefully get enough moisture on it so that we get them to germinate.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see. Hopefully, if all goes according to plan, it will attract a bunch of insects, and they will start building the soil and bringing the microbial life back. And hopefully, we'll see some results next spring when I do some soil tests, and not just analyze the nutrients of the soil and the chemical status of the soil, but the microbial life, and you can do that through some various soil health assessments.
Right, and are you doing it now as well to be able to compare later?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to take some tests this spring
Okay. Before
we plant and compare.
I was
going to
ask you if you already had the test and what they would look like for
soil
that hasn't been taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, most of our agricultural soils, of course, this field is not agricultural, but they have lost 30 to 70% of their soil organic carbon. And so, or soil organic matter, which contains the soil organic carbon. And so I'm assuming this soil, too, has lost a lot of its organic matter. I mean, if you look at a soil and it's lighter colored, you can just tell by looking at it, it's very low in organic matter, and thus soil carbon. And that's important. We need to be capturing carbon and sequestering it in our soils.
Right. So that's another way of helping with the planet and the climate change, is actually like keeping the carbon in the soil through the plants. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's one of the largest, soil is one of the largest carbon sinks. And unfortunately, how we are currently managing our soils is one of the biggest contributing factors to our atmospheric carbon. So it's like the problem, but also the solution, because if we manage it better and plant a diversity of plants and keep living roots in the soil and also create then a flourishing microbial environment below ground, that leads to maximum carbon capture. And then we can actually fix this whole mess if we do that. Hopefully.
That sounds good. Yeah. And so the seeds that you're going to use, I think I read somewhere that they were specific to North America.
So that was kind of also a bit of a misprint. There are a couple of species that are. The Phacelia is specifically native to this area, the Southwest.
Cool.
And it's a wildflower that's super important for bees and other pollinators, and also a cover crop. So it has some benefits below ground as well for the soil. And I think chicory is also native to North America. And then the other species, I'm not sure, but they are beneficial.
Right, so that's really what matters more than anything.
Yeah. In fact, earthworms aren't native to North America, little known fact.
They're not?
No, they're from England. Oh, yeah, God. They were brought over.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And now they're so important. They're a blessing. They're one of the few invasive species that are good.
That's awesome. I love it. I want to go back to you mentioning that you will go to grad school eventually to study soil health. Do you have a plan further than grad school? Like, do you know what you would use that degree for? Do you have dreams?
I have dreams. I have dreams. I think I want to get a PhD and then be able to maybe lead restoration projects related to soil in the Southwest. So we have a lot of degraded landscapes here, and it would be great to be a part of trying to restore those landscapes for the ecosystems and for the people, because both are hurting.
That sounds great. Yeah. Are you seeing art being part of that work?
Yeah, I've been struggling with that for a while. I don't know. I hope that I can equally balance those two passions in my life. I'm worried that working on a PhD will definitely take over my life for a while, but I hope that I can always take time and create space for making art, and hopefully it can always have a focus in soil and ecological health.
Right. Yeah. That sounds pretty nice. Is that all? I mean, not all, but is that your main focus when you're painting or drawing? Is it about the plants?
Yeah. So I took a class in botanical illustration my last semester at Cornell, and it was one of the best classes I took, because I had taken a break from art for years, and I kind of lost my passion for it and couldn't really find subject matter that interested me and was feeling pretty insecure about my art. And so I took this class, and it focused, or it made me realize that you can combine your love of the natural world and art in this really specific way, and how amazing plant forms are when you really look at them closely and try to capture those. And so I just started doing that and learned some new techniques, and that's been really what I'm interested in ever since, is drawing the botanical world. I'm working on a new bag project inspired by the last one, depicting native wildflowers that are good for pollinators, and showing some pollinators pollinating some flowers. And I'll use those profits to buy wildflower seed.
That sounds great.
To people.
Yeah. How has it been working so far? I'm curious. It sounds like a great idea. It sounds like people would be into buying bags that are going to support the soil. Is it working? Like,
yeah, I'm just placing my first seed order, which is exciting. And I'm ordering 450 pounds of cover crop seeds. So I have a lot of seed. Yeah, people should come get it and use it and grow these crops. Yeah. And I mean, they're beautiful. Even if you don't have a farm, you could use them in your backyard, regenerate the soil there, restore it. I was just talking to a woman yesterday who, her backyard, it was just bare soil and it was clearly very unhappy, very degraded. And so she just started planting sunflowers and has noticed a huge difference in the soil and all of the pollinators that she's attracted since she started doing that.
That's so cool. And so can people just go to the website of the Land Trust and get them there, or should they? I'm going to go get some.
Yay!
So should we go to the office of the Land Trust? What's the best way to go with it?
So I'm not sure how it's going to look like exactly yet, but I think call the Land Trust. Once we have the seed there, then there will be more of a clear picture of how it will work. But it will be available, and people should call them to find out how to access it.
That sounds great. And if people want to buy the bags, where are they accessible? Can you buy them online, or is it?
You can buy them at my parents' shop, Mud and Flood, or I brought some to Elevation Coffee Shop as well.
Cool.
And you can buy them online on the Mud and Flood website.
Great. Well,
and also awesome. On First Fridays now in Albuquerque, which are great.
Well, thank you so much, Gwendolyn.
Yeah,
so,
thank you, Elise.
So cool chatting with you, and I hope people take the opportunity that you're bringing to Taos. I think it's great. Thank you.
I hope people do too.
This was Gwendolyn Pieper sharing her work and projects for soil health. As she mentions in the interview, her bag sales enabled her to buy 450 pounds of cover crop seed this spring, which she donated to the Land Trust. The seeds were gone in a couple of days. If you'd like to support her work, the bags are on sale at Mud and Flood. If you'd like to get some seeds, well, stay tuned, as fall might bring in another order of seeds. Gwendolyn's art is currently part of the show 40 Under 40, a visual art show on display here at the TCA at the Encore Gallery until early August. You can learn more about her work at gwendolynpieper.myportfolio.com. Taos Center for the Arts Radio Hour is supported by this station, KNC 93.5 FM, streaming live at truetaosradio.com, and our local business partner, Taos Opera Guild. Music on today's show is from Lone Pinyon, a New Mexican string band, or Orquesta Típica, whose music celebrates the integrity of their region's cultural roots. Thanks for listening. Be well.